Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers from someplace warmer than here.
Yes, down in Fort Myers, Florida, for a charity event, and I've been very fortunate to be asked to help out. There's a lot of former Penn Staters involved, Kajana Carter, O.J. McDuffie, Rogers Alexander, our buddy Goon Conlon among them, but some other athletes, John Cangelosi, and just a lot of fun, raising a lot of money, though, for a couple of very good causes. Down here in Florida, pediatric hospital, and then a group that works with kids who have lost one or both parents.
Well, it sounds like a tremendous cause, but you know what, Jeff? It is so big of you to make that kind of sacrifice to head down to Florida that way. I admire you for making that sacrifice.
It's who I am. It's what I do, Jim.
All right, Jeff, here's the segue. Speaking of things you do, should I point out to our listeners what you're drinking?
Absolutely. Complimentary champagne as I checked into the resort.
You're roughing it, aren't you?
Well, I thought it was a trick question. The guy behind the desk is like, "And would you like your glass of complimentary champagne?" And I'm like, "Well, yes. Am I an idiot? Yeah. Of course I will take that. Thank you."
All righty, let's move on. Again, speaking of things that Jeff does, Jeff covers wrestling. And last week, Jeff, Olympic trials in State College at Bryce Jordan Center. First of all, before we even get into any of the results, what was the atmosphere like?
It was fantastic. I mean, the crowd, as you would expect, was into it. It was a large crowd for all four sessions. Not many empty seats for any of the sessions at any point. And the wrestling gym was just crazy good. I mean, it really was an honor to be able to watch those guys compete at that level. And, you know, there was some, I guess, probably bittersweet situations with the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club, where you had Nick Lee and Zane Rutherford wrestling for a spot. You had, obviously, David Taylor and Aaron Brooks meeting for a spot on the team. Kyle Dake and Jason Nolf. I think Penn State fans had an easier time sorting through that one. But, I mean, they're Nittany Lion Wrestling Club teammates. And it's tough when you see a kid that you know has put everything into it, is doing it the right way, has the skill set to get to the Olympics, get eliminated. But, it's the nature of the sport. And again, it's just tough when you have teammates, and in a couple of those cases, college teammates, who really have just a ton of respect for each other. But, you know, there's only one spot on the Olympic team, and they had to wrestle for it. It was special stuff, though, over the 2 days at the Jordan Center.
I'm sure it was bittersweet for a lot of the wrestlers having to compete against their friends. And probably the match that really caught the imagination of everyone was Aaron Brooks and David Taylor. And there's this great picture that's going around of the two of them after the decision. And if you're a Penn State fan, again, bittersweet, but still just an incredible event.
No question. And, I think of the gratitude that Cale Sanderson has kind of built the Penn State program around. And I was not surprised, but I was really happy to hear Aaron Brooks express openly the love and appreciation he has for David Taylor. I mean, if you think back to when everything got underway here in the Cale Sanderson era, I mean, it was Quentin Wright staying over, and it was David Taylor making the move to Penn State. Like, I think if you're looking at two wrestlers that kind of sparked the start of the dynastic run here by the program. At least in my mind, those are the two guys that I would give the most individual credit to. And there's obviously many others involved there, Frank Molinaro and Ed Ruth. And I'm not meaning to belittle or, give proper respect to the contributions of all. But, I think Quentin winning that national title and kind of leading Penn State to its first national championship. And then David Taylor, again, was just the highly heralded prospect, has that relationship with Cale from when he was a young man. He wanted to be, the next Cale Sanderson. And to a large degree, I think that is what he became. But Aaron Brooks gave David Taylor a lot of respect and said, this is the guy that really did lay the groundwork for what everybody else behind him has been able to do here within the program. And, those are just two really special wrestlers, really special men, and they come from really special families. And I think for Penn State fans, again, no matter who won, you were going to feel great for that guy. And no matter who lost, you were going to feel horrible because, in David's case, I think we're probably looking at the end of his career one way or another at some point this year. Now, he may have an opportunity to compete at the World Championships yet later this year. I'm not sure how all of that's going to play out. I don't know if he knows how it's going to play out yet, but clearly we're looking at the end of his career here much sooner rather than later. And we certainly have seen the arrival of Aaron Brooks. He just wrestled a spectacular two-day tournament.
Like I said, it just made it special for Penn State fans. And it's great to see that mutual respect, everyone doing these things correctly. But this is the way sports works. Eventually, the younger guy takes over. You just hope it's done with this kind of class. Now, those two were not the only, obviously, Penn State folks. How about doing a wrap-up for us of the other Penn Staters that are making their way to the Olympics?
Yeah, so Zane Rutherford earned a spot on the U.S. team. Now, he's not guaranteed going to the Olympics yet because the United States has not qualified at two weights yet for the Olympics. There's a qualification process through other tournaments, and the U.S. just hasn't placed highly enough in any of those yet. So there's one more opportunity. They call it the Last Chance Tournament, and this year it'll be in Istanbul, Turkey, May 9th through the 12th. So Zane Rutherford will go over there and try to qualify the 65-kilogram weight class for the U.S. Spencer Lee has to do the same at 57 kilos. So Zane is on the U.S. team, but not in the Olympics just yet. And then Kyle Dake beat Jason Nolf. Dake is just so good with his defense. It was kind of a similar situation to Brooks and Taylor, where Taylor could not get in on Brooks and Nolf could not get in on Kyle Dake. And so Dake, the Cornell grad, but he's with the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club now, will go to Paris. And then Kyle Snyder, the Ohio State grad who's with the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club, is also on his way to Paris. And then Mason Paris at 125 kilos is the Michigan grad is also headed to Paris to represent the U.S. So, the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club has four of the six starters for Team USA. And Penn State is the only school with more than one in two, in Zane Rutherford and Aaron Brooks.
That's exciting. And we talked about this a little bit last week, and you're alluding to it, that there's only six weight classes. Why is that? And that makes the talent at each weight class just crazy.
Yeah, and it makes it, honestly, Jim, watching some of the action over the weekend, it just it's unfair to a lot of the wrestlers, and it's not just here in the U.S. It's all of the countries that have wrestling, but it really isn't fair because you had a guy like Carter Storace who's wrestling. He had to either go down a weight or up a weight, and he tried to get down, and it just, his body was not going to let him. So he had to go up a weight, and it's just not fair to those guys. And there's a bunch of them. How we got there is the, idiotic politics of the IOC and their decision to initially eliminate wrestling from the Olympic Games, there was an immediate and very strong pushback from the wrestling community, and really, I think, from the sporting community, recognizing the importance of wrestling as one of the original Olympic sports, and the following it has across much of the world. And so the compromise that was reached with the Wrestling Federation and the IOC was this, okay, we'll let you back in, but only six weights. And while certainly that is better than nothing, it's just not right. It is not good for the sport. And I don't think it's good for the Olympics. I just think they need to get back to 10 weight classes. And, you know, they have a set amount of medals. I forget what the number is, but the IOC does not. They like to keep whatever the number is at where it's at. Fine. Then get rid of some of these sports that, again, my opinion, don't have any business being in the Olympics. There's no history with them. To me, that's the answer. And then you get back to the 10 weight classes for men's freestyle, for Greco-Roman, and for women's wrestling. I mean, I think all three disciplines deserve that opportunity to go full bore here in the Olympics with what they normally put into the world championships.
Well, you know, Jeff, I don't have the list of Olympic sports in front of me, but I do know over the last several Olympics, some of these things that they call sports, they're ridiculous. And to take a sport, like you said, with the history that wrestling has and chop that up, it really does make no sense. And if the part of the reasoning is, gee, we can't have more gold medals put out, my goodness, how many do you already have out? So just to have a few more,
yes,
to keep a legitimate set of weight classes, you know, so guys don't have, I would think with six weight classes, I can't imagine how much difference there is in from one weight class to the other. Just not right, just not fair. Anyway, Jeff, that's going to have to be the last word on wrestling. When we come back, we're going to talk some football. Stick around for that.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th, and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's the alcohol-drinking Jeff Byers. I am Jim Galante. They only gave you one glass, not a bottle, just
a glass.
Yeah,
that was the, you know, mild disappointment, but I'll get over it.
All right, let's move on, Jeff. Hey, something caught my eye, and I wanted to, I did share with you, and I guess it's from CBS Sports. These kind of things are fun. It's kind of like when all those mock drafts came out. I love those. I get every one of them, and I pour over it. Now we've got the post-spring, pre-fall football, top 25 college football rankings for the 2024 season came out from, like I said, it was CBS Sports. Do you love these things as much as I do, Jeff?
I do, and it goes back to my childhood. I could hardly wait for the magazines to come out, all of the magazines that had all of the different polls, and it was Athlon and Street and Smith, and I'm going to end up forgetting ones that I don't mean to forget, but it was a big deal, and we would go and buy every one of them and read through everything, and this magazine says this about Penn State, this magazine says that, this magazine's stupid, this magazine's brilliant. it's fun, it gets you thinking, gets you talking, and at the end of the day, I understand, pretty meaningless, but a lot of fun.
Well, that's exactly it, but it didn't change the fact. Intellectually, I knew they were meaningless, but I was just like you too. How could they rank Penn State so low? Oh my God, they're anti-Penn State, and on and on and on. Yes, I did all of those things also. Well, let's start there. Let's start with Penn State and where they have them ranked. They have them ranked 9th. What's your feeling on that? Are you mad at them? Are you yelling at them for that? Or do you think that they're smart by having Penn State 9th?
No, to be honest, I think that's about right for, where what I think reasonable expectations would be for the upcoming season. I think, there's with new coordinators, there's certainly some questions about how all of this is going to mesh. I think there's still some questions about Drew Aller and exactly where, he fits in the big picture here of quarterbacks throughout the country. Can he take that next step and be consistent and confident in the big moments, in the big games? I think that's still, a legitimate question. I think there's certainly some questions nationally about the receiving core. But I think with Michigan rotating off the schedule, but then, some of the new teams rotating on, that magical 10-2 that just always seems to be around this Penn State program. I mean, I think that's 10-2 with that schedule probably gets you right around 9. And I think that's what most people are kind of pegging Penn State at. The optimists have them maybe 11-1, pessimists 9-3. And, I'm sure there's some extreme optimists at 12-0 and extreme pessimists at 8-4 or worse. But I think that 10-2 is kind of where most people are settling in again on what to expect from this program. And, so that number 9 ranking seems about right with that schedule, if that was the record.
And you know what, Jeff, and we're going to get into the schedule through the summer and all, but just a quick point on that. 11-1, 10-2, 9-3. Last year, before the season started, I think we could all just say 10-2 was that predicted. The 10 games they were favored in, they were going to win.
Yep.
And the 2 games they were underdogs in, history told us they were going to lose those 2. And that's exactly how it played out. And no real nail biters either and all that, no toss up games. And I think the big difference with the schedule this year is they have that one game, Ohio State, where they'll be the underdog. That, that's pretty much a given. But they have a handful of games that I think going into the season, people are like, that's, if not a toss-up game, it's at least a close game.
Yep.
I'm thinking, USC, especially since it's on the road.
Yep.
Washington, you have to respect them, although I'm looking and they're not in this top 25, unless I'm just missing them. But and also, I think, Wisconsin on the road. So there, and West Virginia even, I think there's a chance of getting ambushed in that first game.
Yep.
So what's fascinating to me is instead of it being 10 sure wins, 2 sure losses, it's more like, well, we see that one loss, and then we've got maybe 4 games that are toss-up games, and then whatever my math is, whatever games are left that they should win, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's about right. And, it starts again with you know, a big road game, whether it's, you know, a Big Ten road game or this year that West Virginia, where, you know, I think at least from the Penn State perspective, you're looking at it saying, well, that should be a win. But like you said, it's certainly not a guaranteed W going in.
And certainly if it's West Virginia at home, you know they're going to be up for it. And if they could get that into a primetime game, I'm sure the fan base will be jacked up for that. And by the way, West Virginia is ranked 22nd in this early top 25. Let's go to the top of the list here. Ohio State, number one. Not a surprise there. But how much pressure is going to be on that team after they invested a lot of money in bringing in transfer portal talent? Does Ryan Day have to win it all this year?
So I think from the Ohio State perspective, the answer is yes. Like, I think they are looking at this, and, you know, there's no question that they've gone all in. And I think they have the most talented team in the country. I really do wonder about getting so many guys in with the egos, with the expectations, with all of it. I think there's a lot to manage there. Now, I think we've talked about this before, Jim. Most coaches, I think, would say, okay, yep, give me that talent, and I'll try to figure out how to manage the egos. I understand that, but it's still a management process, and I think the potential there for jealousies and for a lack of camaraderie in that locker room because of different NIL deals, different playing time early in the season, especially if they get caught upset. Like, I think this thing could derail quickly and easily. I also think there's enough talent there that, yeah, they could be kind of like UConn basketball was this year, where it's like, hey, we're just we're better than everybody else, and we're going to go out and prove it. But I'm not sure there is as much of a given as I think some are supposing they are in terms of winning this thing, because football, we talk about it all the time, Jim. It is the ultimate team sport, and you need everybody pulling in the same direction. And I wonder whether or not that's actually going to happen in Columbus.
I think the other part of the equation, the other variable, is at quarterback for them. And they have a very talented quarterback room. In fact, they're five deep, okay, as far as highly regarded quarterbacks. But that's a situation that could get very volatile. I haven't looked recently at the portal to see if any of them have entered the portal. I think there's a good bet of a couple of them will. At the top, I don't think they've decided on that starter yet. And sometimes that can get ugly in a couple ways, where you have a split locker room,
yep,
with two quarterbacks. And the other thing is, is there one of them who will be your definitive leader, the definitive starter? They still have to figure that out. So that's another variable. And again, remember last year, Kyle McCord, I mean, he was always looking over his shoulder.
Yep.
And I'm not sure that was the best situation for him to succeed. Real quick, some of these others, I'll read off just the top 10 real fast. Ohio State, Georgia, Texas, Oregon, Alabama, Ole Miss, Michigan, Missouri, Penn State, and Notre Dame. It's interesting, Texas and Oregon, 3 and 4, moving to new conferences. Again, Southeast Conference and Big Ten. And if I'm looking at this correctly, if you go through the top 12, 10 of the 12 are Southeast Conference, Big Ten, and then you got Notre Dame and Florida State sneaking in at 10 and 11, Jeff.
Yep. And again, I think for most observers of college football, that is not a surprise. No question, the Big Ten and the SEC, especially with the new additions coming in this season, are the two premier conferences in college football. And there's a reason that they are kind of dictating now the direction that the sport's going to go. And yeah, I just Alabama to me is, I am going to be fascinated to watch what Alabama does and how that season ultimately develops for them. And Ole Miss is kind of similar to Ohio State. I mean, maybe not quite the expectations of the Buckeyes, but I do have questions again about how all of those different big name players and players with high expectations, how that works when you get them all into the same locker room and competing for spots as well as competing against outside competition. I think those two, for me, are going to be the most fascinating teams to watch this year, just to see kind of what the chemistry is and if the expectations that are sky high, certainly for both teams, actually come to fruition.
And I think the other point to be made is, even though it's Ohio State and Georgia at the top, there is a bit of variety here. You have Ole Miss 6th. You have Missouri 8th. Texas all the way at 3rd. Oregon at 4th. I don't think this is that disaster that a lot of people thought would happen with NIL. Well, you know what? There's a bit more parity probably today than there was 5 years ago. I think that's a good thing. All right, Jeff, that's it for quarter number 2. Stick around. Lots more to go.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training and State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 3. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. Jeff, on my agenda for today, quarter number 3. And you may want to get yourself another drink.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk NIL.
Oh, boy.
One of our favorite topics, right?
Yeah. Boy, and there is a lot to unpack there still.
There really is so much going on. And I do want to talk to you about, let's start with this. Some of the rules are changing where they're talking about bringing the collective, essentially, the task that the collectives did in-house. Now, just to understand what that means, it's not saying the players are going to be paid by the university. They're not. They'll do the task that the collectives were supposed to do, which is to connect the players with NIL opportunities, essentially. So they're just lining that up. And boy, I can't imagine anything going wrong with that, Jeff.
No, I think they finally got it all solved and we can move on to other issues now, Jim. It's fantastic. Listen, so part of this I actually do think the universities are going to pay the players. I think that is now inevitable and I think we're going to see that much sooner rather than later. And exactly how that changes the dynamic of everything is going to be interesting to me because I do think that you're going to have, much like the NFL, you're going to have collective bargaining here. Now, what I'm curious about is how that collective bargaining is reached and who is doing the collective bargaining. Because these players, again, are moving through, presumably now that we're almost through the COVID era of the 6-7 year athletes. You know, we're talking about 5 years where these guys will have 4 years of eligibility to use. And so I think the likelihood of a long-term deal is not very good. And with that, like how there's so many unanswered questions. Like what happens if the college players go on strike? They can't reach an agreement. And again, the other part of this is who are they reaching an agreement with? Is it the networks? Is it the schools? Is it the conferences? So again, there's so many moving parts here and so much uncertainty, but I do think one of the things that is good to me is that the universities, in compliance with the conferences, are going to get a handle on this once again. It is going to be the universities and the conferences working with the players. And I think the fan component, is going to be much less. It's going to go back to, hey, fans, this is your ticket price. You can complain about it. This is your parking price. You can complain about it, or you can opt out. But those are where the fans come in. I think this, from my viewpoint, and it's not just a Penn State thing. I think a lot of Penn State fans are getting caught up in the what they perceive as greed from Penn State. It was just not a good system that was set up initially. And there may have been some good intent behind it, but I think this is what happens when you have an organization, your leadership organization has the lack of foresight that the NCAA had. And everybody was just left scrambling, trying to figure out with this, anybody with any kind of minor vision of the future could have seen this coming 15 years ago and started preparing for it. And the NCAA just did zilch in that regard.
You hit it, Jeff. There's no doubt. We all saw it coming and they did nothing about it. And as far as like the pricing, I think the fans are used to ticket prices going up and everything else that goes along with it. So I'm not sure it will bother them as much as, you know, another handout, outreach, give us more money. But I also think, you know, I would be upset by that if all of a sudden there's this huge jump in ticket prices. Well, we've got to pay the players. Well, you know what? When you got all that extra money, television money that got bumped up, help me out here, Jeff. I do not recall the announcement coming out saying, oh, since we're getting so much more TV money, we're going to reduce ticket prices. Did I miss that announcement?
No, I don't think you did. But I will throw this into the hopper, and this is where I do think this is going to get I think it's going to get complicated, and I think it's going to be very difficult, very challenging for the conferences and for the fans to try to kind of get around what's coming next. And that is, you know, I think most of us are resolved, whether we like it, whether we think it's good or not, you can see that football players and very likely, almost guaranteed, basketball players are going to get paid. There's going to be some sort of a agreement reached, and that is going to happen. What I think is very unclear at the moment is what happens with all of the other sports that are not revenue producers in intercollegiate athletics. And how does, one, does the money get distributed to those athletes in any way? And if it does, how does it get distributed? And I think we've talked about this before too, Jim, but it's just, it's very challenging in that regard. Because if you say, let's just say they come to an agreement and everybody's okay with, and I'm just making up the number, it'll be $5,000 a year for any scholarship student athlete on the campus. That's not in football or basketball. And I have no idea. I'm making that number up. I don't know if that's way high, way low, or whatever. But let's just say that's the number. Well, if it's $5,000 per athlete, again, in the Big Ten, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, they all have over 30 varsity sports. There are many schools, I think most schools in the SEC are under 20 for sure, and I think some are in that 14-16 neighborhood. Well, guess what? That leaves a lot more revenue for the football and basketball side of things after you dole out those Olympic sports payments in the SEC than it would for the Big Ten. So unless the Big Ten cuts sports, which obviously is a possibility here as well. So, you know, I know most folks are focused, and understandably and rightfully so, on football and basketball. As the guy that has followed Penn State wrestling for over 30 years and, you know, deals with a lot of the coaches of the Olympic or the non-revenue sports, that is where my focus is. I think it'll play itself out, and it's going to work to whatever degree it works for football and basketball. I think the real change, like the earth-shattering change, may be coming with the other sports that right now provide those opportunities for scholarships for, you know, kids coming out of high school. And I just, I really wonder where that's heading. And I think that's going to be one of the most difficult challenges here for the conferences and schools in terms of figuring out how all of this is going to fit together.
Now, Jeff, you are a much nicer person than I am. Okay. let's just start with that premise. And as we've ever approached this conversation, you've always been very good, empathetic to those Olympic sports. My take on it has always been, this is not complicated. It's not. If it costs too much to have those sports because of having to pay the players, you just don't have that sport anymore. And I know that sounds cold-hearted, but if you can't carry your weight, and, you know, it for the longest time, all those sports that, you know, the non-revenue sports, players chose to participate because they wanted to. If they got any kind of scholarship, that's great. There's a lot who aren't on scholarship, but they choose to participate because they still felt they got something out of it. You know, the satisfaction of being part of a team, of being a collegiate athlete, of learning certain lessons that come with sports at the highest level like that, that was enough for them to participate in the sport. And my feeling is, if going into it, we know that's going to be the discussion. We will, if you're Penn State, I would say, be candid, be upfront. We cannot afford to spend, sports will get sacrificed if we have to do that. And I think the powers that be then have to make the decision, is it worth it?
Yeah, and I think you're right on all of that. And I think it's going to be jarring for a lot of people when they see how this plays out. Now, I think, like, what I think is going to happen is you're going to still have those non-revenue sports, even with scholarships and even with some payment, but it's going to be a much smaller group of schools that are playing what I'll call big time lacrosse or wrestling or swimming. And I think you'll see much more, and this may be the right thing at the end of the day, much more club sports like hockey used to be at Penn State, like rugby is at Penn State. There's a bunch of sports like that where, yeah, it's still great competition, and it's people that, as you said, they want to participate in the sport, and they're there to go to college. But those scholarship opportunities that we think of as making it big time, I think will largely evaporate.
All right, Jeff, that's going to be the final word for quarter three. We got more NIL to talk about, though, when we start up quarter four. Stay tuned.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training and State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking about our favorite topic, NIL, and what's going to happen going forward. The world is changing. We know that, Jeff, and it's going to keep changing. This conversation was prompted by the NCAA talking about bringing the responsibilities of the collective in-house. Just to recap, that's the university then would be making the arrangements for NIL money, not making payments directly to the players. But as you pointed out, that's where we're headed. There's no doubt that is where we're headed. We were talking about, how do you pay or do you compensate all of those non-revenue sports? But I want to circle back to at least a starting point, which is football and getting a collective bargaining agreement. And the question you brought it up is, who do you collective bargain with? Is it the players with the team, with the conference, with the NCAA? Who's that going to be, Jeff?
Yeah, on both sides. Like, who represents the players? Like, is it just each school picks a representative and, you know, from their team and they go? Is it a group? I mean, I don't know. I don't know how all of that gets figured out. And then even beyond that, Jim, so if they, you know, let's say the whole thing is just fascinating to me because, again, if it's the, let's just say the conference, because what I'm expecting is that the conferences led by the Big Ten and the SEC are going to say, we will set this up. And, you know, maybe each school has a player representative and the player representatives come in and meet you're going to have attorneys involved here, obviously. So, again, does each school have an attorney representative? Do they have a couple? I mean, I don't know how all of that is going to work. But you've got to get that figured out is, okay, who is representing the players? And then, again, who are the players negotiating with? Because if it's the school, right, then this is going to be kind of a free-for-all. Like, I think the conferences want to avoid that. I don't think you want to have each school just dealing with its own players and figuring out what's good for them. And because there's just going to be too much disparity in terms of what the agreements are. And, you know, state laws come into this. One of the things that I have not heard much discussion on, too, Jim, is, like, you hear pro athletes talk right now about, well, yeah, I'd rather play in Florida where there's no income taxes, and, you know, at least for the home games, I don't have to worry about that. Well, if you don't think that's going to start factoring in with these college kids, well, I'm getting $200,000 over, you know, or $400,000, whatever it is, over 4 years, I'm going to keep more of that if I'm in Florida versus Pennsylvania. And, I mean, you're going to start doing that comparative shopping. The families are, the smart ones are. And so that's going to start factoring into this as well. And again, how does this, so if it is the conferences, which is what I think the conferences are at least angling for, even then, what do you have happen, Jim, if like the players in the SEC can't come to an agreement with the SEC, like, and they don't, do they just not play for, I mean, like, can you envision a college season not occurring or occurring with maybe two-thirds of the normal teams because one-third are on strike?
Well, here's the thing. It's interesting that you bring that up. You know, there was once a day, long, long time ago, where the thought of Major League Baseball players going on strike was unimaginable. Yeah. Well, we can now imagine it because it's happened. So I think it's potentially possible, but at this point, I feel like if they could collectively bargain, I don't think they'll do it team by team. That would be too hard. It'll be minimum conference. And I can't imagine the Southeast Conference and Big Ten, who are now talking to each other, saying, hey, wait a minute, we can't let the other conference get ahead of us, but what if it turns into a bidding war where, okay, we'll pay them more. Well, then we'll pay them a little more, and then we'll pay them. That I can't imagine them now. It might be called collusion. So, but, you know, if the two conferences work together, where essentially that is what big time football is right now, the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, this might create that super conference or whatever you want to talk, what you want to call it, where it'll force the Big Ten and Southeast Conference plus Florida State and Clemson and North Carolina and whoever the right teams are to say, okay, we're about paying the players. We know it's got to be done. And if we want the elite players, we'll create an organization that could collectively bargain. Yeah. My imagination on the player side won't be much different than it is with the professional athletes, where they get together, maybe among themselves, they'll vote their own head of their union as a player. But what they really are going to do is hire some company. And it wouldn't surprise me if it's some group or people who are, you know, running the NFL Players Association or that, to come in and say, hey, we will do this. We will help you contract us to do this, and we will negotiate for you. And they come up with a number. And I also believe, and this happens in the professional sports, where the players will typically capitulate because their careers are short. And short might be 8 years, 10 years, and they don't want to lose a percentage of their – 1 year is a lot to them. Well, guess what? If you are a college athlete, you have even less time. So I am not going to haggle. I want to play football. And they're also at a point where they're technically not paid as employees right now. So, hey, if you're going to give me $100,000, I'm not sure I'm going to haggle to make it $120,000.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say, I think you're right there. The other part of this that I think is going to be worth watching is what are the academic requirements moving forward? Because if I am a paid employee, like, is it written into the working contract that part of what my job is I have to go to classes and maintain a 2.0 or whatever it is, GPA. And if I don't, like, what is at risk? Is the money guaranteed as long as I'm showing up to practice, or do I need to be, there's so many moving parts. I would love to be sitting in on these discussions that the Big Ten and the SEC and the other conferences are having, but, because every time you start talking about one component of this, you, inevitably there's two or three other components that bleed into that. And it's like, oh yeah, we've got to address that. I just think getting a comprehensive plan is an almost overwhelming undertaking here.
Well, here's the other risk. If they start being called employees who do not have to go to class, is why are you limited to 4 years?
Yep.
You know, and this is where I wonder if under that collective bargaining umbrella, the having to be a student and maintain that, would there be calmer heads at the head of the players union who say, you know what, only a very small percentage of our group is going to make it to the NFL. With that in mind, it as a group, we are better off having this requirement to go to school for that 95% who will never make it to professional sports. It would be in our best interest to have to go to class, take our medicine, and show up for classes and get a degree. And as much as, you know, players now will say, oh, we're not compensated, you are. You are getting a scholarship, and that's worth, you know, Penn State, if you're an out-of-state, I believe it's estimated at about $50,000 a year, okay, room, board, yep, tuition, all of that. So you are already getting compensated that amount, and to give that up, you're giving up a lot. And by the way, yeah, if you're an employee and don't have to go to class, I guess you don't have to get a scholarship either.
Yeah, and that is the other part of this that I think is I'm curious to see how this works out, because yeah, to me that is a huge part of the compensation is that scholarship and what it pays for and the opportunities that helps open up. And so yeah, to me that is part of the collective bargaining. You know, now might they ask for more scholarship opportunities? Say, hey, we want another 10 scholarships per school per year. I don't know. I don't know if the kids have that kind of vision and you know, this is what we want to use our power for, is to open up more opportunities for more kids in our sport, or, you know, if it's just going to be focused on how much more money can we get in?
Well, I'm thinking the voting members are those 85 guys on scholarship. Wait a minute. You want to add 10 more guys to compete with me?
Yeah.
For playing time and for this money? I'd rather have it just 85. I have a better chance of getting on the field. And whatever amount of money is split 85 ways instead of 100 ways.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point. It's I don't know. This whole thing is just going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds.
The last note on this is just remember, whenever negotiations are going on, the vote goes, what is in my personal best interest?
Yep.
Always remember that. That is it for the show, Jeff. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training and State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.